Live from the historic parsonage of 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's Iron Sharpens Iron, a radio platform on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27, verse 17 tells us, "Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Matthew Henry said that in this passage, quote, "We are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with, and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better." It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. Now here's our host, Chris Arnton.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, Lake City, Florida, and the rest of humanity living on the planet Earth who are listening via live streaming at IronSharpensIronRadio.com. This is Chris Arnton, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, wishing you all a happy Friday on this 24th day of August 2018. And I am delighted to have, for the very first time, a guest today who is going by an alias. And this will become very quickly obvious why he is using an alias. Today, our guest, we are calling Brother Joe, and he is going to be discussing China, facts and fiction, and its culture and religious climate, described by one Christian American who has lived there. And it's my honor and privilege to welcome you to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Brother Joe.
Thank you, Chris. Great to be with you.
And this is, I think, the third time that we have had someone using an alias on the show due to reasons that they each had. As we typically do on this program, when we have a first-time guest, Brother Joe, we'd like you to give us a summary of your testimony, obviously leaving out any names that would make an alias a moot point. But if you could tell us something about the religious atmosphere that you were raised in, if any, and how our sovereign Lord drew you to himself, what providential circumstances arose in your life by his hand that led you to him, and how you were saved.
Sure, Chris. Happy to do that. Well, I was born into a, I would say, a nominally Roman Catholic family. And when I say nominally, what I mean by that is that we had the Roman Catholic faith as part of our family heritage, but we were not really churchgoers. We didn't go to church every week. But my mother did care enough about my religious education to send me every week from public school to the Roman Catholic Church to receive religious education. So I was, as a very young boy, receiving some weekly education in the Roman Catholic faith. I turned into my teenage years, I sort of departed from being very faithful to that. When I was a boy, I would go to church sometimes by myself, but then when I became a teenager, I became enamored with typical teenage things and hanging out with friends, and so I wasn't really doing much in regard to developing my own faith or what I believed to be my faith at the time. But if you had asked me, I would always tell you that I believed in God and I believed that God was with me, but I really didn't know much about God. I didn't know what the Bible taught, and I didn't really even know what the teachings of the Catholic Church were, my very own church. Moving on into high school and then going into university, I began to have a little bit of resurgence toward my religious thinking. And in one of my university courses, I had to read parts of the Bible for a literature class. And this was actually my first serious reading of the Bible. We had to write essays on parts of the Bible, and we didn't do a full reading of the scriptures, but we did readings of parts of it. And I can remember being asked questions like, what is Paul trying to say to the Jews and Romans, and things of that nature that we had to answer. And I would write essays or things of that nature about it. And I actually found one of those essays and was quite amazed to realize how close I was to understanding the gospel at that point, but it had not yet really taken root in me. It wasn't changing the way I lived my life, and it wasn't making an impact in the way I thought about things and the way I handled situations. But then moving on later in college and then moving into the work environment, I began to pick up that Bible that I had bought for college again. And I was reading it on my own. And I would pick it up and read it some days and then put it down, pick it up again, put it down for a few weeks, pick it up again. And over time, that Bible that I was reading began to make real change in my life. And I began to see some things as I read that Bible. Some of the things were really disturbing to me. For example, I had always been a relatively moral individual, relatively morally upstanding individual as compared to my friends. But when I began to read the Bible, I was reading these statements that Jesus would make that were quite unsettling to me, you know, where Jesus would talk about how even looking at someone lustfully is considered adultery, how even anger is like murder in the eyes of God, and from Matthew 5. So I would read these statements and be quite disturbed because I had a view of myself that I was a very nice guy and I was a very good person. And relatively speaking, as compared to some people around me, you might say I was. But when I began to see God's standards and compared those to my own standards, I was finding that I fell very far short. But at the same time, reading that same Bible, I was starting to read about things that Jesus did and why Jesus came. And I was quite surprised. I recall reading when the incident in Matthew 16, when Peter doesn't like what Jesus is saying about the fact that he has to go to Jerusalem and be crucified, and he's going to rise on the third day. And you know, Peter tries to rebuke him, and Jesus says to him, "Get behind me, Satan. You know, what you're saying is not from God, it's from men." When I read that, I was shocked because I was in 100% agreement with Peter on that point, thinking, "Lord, you should not be crucified. That should not happen to you." And as I thought about it and as I read the Bible more, that confusion began to lift. I began to realize that this was the very purpose for which Jesus came, that he actually came to give his life as a ransom, and that that was the whole gospel, that it was the people like me who thought themselves even to be good, who needed to be saved from their sins, that I was not a good man, that I, in fact, needed God's mercy, that I needed Christ to save me, and that's why Christ had died on the cross and rose again. So as I realized those things, I made Christ the Lord of my life, and that really changed my whole thinking and direction. Later on, I had, through working, had opportunities to teach, eventually had opportunity to even go to seminary, had opportunity then to go to China as well. And it was while I was in China that I had many opportunities for evangelism and understanding and learning the culture, reaching out to Chinese people, and doing evangelism in my own way there, and really understanding what some of the history was and why people behave the way they do and what was happening in the culture. And it took a lot of learning to understand that. And so that's why I came here today, Chris, is that I'm hoping to share some of my experiences from being there and some of the things I've learned over the years in studying China, being a student of China and Chinese people and Chinese friends, to help other Christians and understand what how they may apply these things, and also to have us think in terms of there is a great need in China, a great need for sound teaching, a great need for sound doctrine, and we'll talk about reasons why that's the case as we go along.
Well, as you know, our theme today is China, and specifically facts and fiction, about China and its culture and religious climate described by you, who are a Christian American who has lived there. And let's start, first of all, with what led you to China, using language that wouldn't be so detailed that it would reveal your identity and so on.
Sure. Growing up, I grew up in a multiracial neighborhood, which is actually, I believe, a very good thing. I recommend it, although it's sometimes not easy to find. But I grew up in a multiracial neighborhood and had friends of all different races, whether African-American, Irish, Italian, Chinese, Asian, all different types of individuals. And we were all friends, and we managed to be friends. And, of course, we also had our racial divisions among us, you know, where we would get into divisions, you know, where we would go back to those kind of wrong ways of thinking about each other. But growing up in that kind of an environment gave me quite an open mind toward understanding different people and toward understanding Asian people in particular. And when I was working, I had a lot of opportunity to interact with Asian professionals who had come to the United States from China to work. The United States immigration policy allows for Chinese workers to be in the United States, and so I got exposure to many professional Chinese workers, master's level, PhD level individuals, and made some close friendships and learned a lot about Chinese culture from them. And I had a strong desire from knowing them and my own experience in life just to know more, to learn the Chinese language and to understand that culture more. And along with that, I had some work opportunities that came up that gave me opportunity to be relocated to China. And the combination of those things, I thought, was an ideal scenario where I could go to China, learn the language, learn more about the culture and the people, not just have my own perceptions about it, and also be able to share the things that I knew and learned, and I wanted to be a light to people wherever I am, whether that's in the United States or China. I wanted to take that opportunity to be a light to people, so I took that.
Now, were you at all familiar with the Chinese language before you went there?
No, and I didn't know how to say hello in Chinese, which, by the way, is ni hao. I didn't even know how to say hello before I went to China, so I started from scratch when I went to China completely and built up.
And I'm sorry, I'm very forgetful, but how long ago was that?
It's more than 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah, more than 10 years ago that I had first relocated to China.
And so tell us about that very first experience setting foot on the ground there in China.
Well, as a foreigner, I had first lived in Beijing. And as a foreigner, when you're exposed to Beijing, Beijing is like the political capital of China. And at the same time, it's also one of the more difficult places in China to live, the reason being the pollution and the fact that it's a fast-moving city, fast-moving environment, a very busy place to be. And so it also, along with that, also has access to a lot of things. So it has the positive aspects of being a big city. But from the perspective of a foreigner, people have probably heard reports about the pollution. The pollution in Beijing, it was a very big problem for me, very difficult. I managed to live with it, but it was not easy at all. Even Chinese people who have grown up in that environment with the pollution have a very difficult time with it, and there's been a lot of complaining to the Chinese government about that.
You're speaking specifically and primarily about air pollution or even garbage everywhere you walk?
No, not garbage everywhere you walk. I should have clarified that. Yes, I'm talking about air pollution. And there is a lot of debate in China in terms of how healthy is the food and you know, how high are the standards for things that are eaten in China. You know, so there are some issues there. but I'm talking primarily about, in terms of things that immediately affect you as a foreigner, the air pollution would be a very serious one. Shanghai is better. It's probably because it's closer to the sea. It has a little more ventilation, but even Shanghai's air pollution has been growing quite a bit over time.
So how many years total have you spent living in China?
Well, Chris, I why don't we move on to some other questions that would not be so specific?
Okay, sure, I understand. Yep. The one of the key reasons we had you on today, and by the way, I want to let our listeners know that Brother Joe isn't being rude, but it's a very sensitive issue when you have somebody living in a foreign country under communist rule and so on. It's pretty much a no-brainer why we have to be very careful, at least to a degree. But facts from fiction. Well, what, to your knowledge, or in your opinion, are some frequently held beliefs by Americans, and perhaps even more specifically by American Christians, that you have found not to be true living in China?
You know, maybe you can get listeners to write in about what they think. But
let me repeat our email address right now, so maybe they will send some in. It's chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. Please only remain anonymous if it's a personal and private matter. Maybe you're even listening in China and you want to ask a personal and private question, or just a question anonymously for that reason. But if it's just a general question, please, as I said, give us at least your first name, city and state, and country of residence. But if you could continue now.
Sure. Well, the communist government in China certainly has taken a lot of, call it what you will, very, very strong criticism in the media for its persecution of religion. And, some of those things we can discuss, and we will, of course. But there are also times where I've seen even well-meaning individuals go too far with it. For example, I've heard people say that you don't have access to a Bible in China, and that's actually not true. People at the government-registered churches in China can buy Bibles.
And there are many English Bibles being manufactured and printed in China, are they not?
Yes, that's true. And in fact, in China, they print... Well, typically in China, in terms of what the government will allow to be printed and sold in the bookstores there. By the way, the Bible is not sold in bookstores, but it's sold in the church bookstores. So I should make that distinction. So China has not opened up its freedoms to the point where you will see Bibles being sold, in mainstream bookstores. But churches that are government-registered churches, government-allowed churches, they will have a book-selling place in that church that at which you can buy a Bible. And those Bibles will typically be Chinese, or they will be Chinese-English bilingual Bibles. And usually when it's Chinese-English, it's the Chinese version with either the NIV or the ESV.
All right, we have a listener. CJ from Lindenhurst, Long Island, New York, asks, I know that when the Soviet Union still existed, there were the underground churches and there were the puppet churches that were permitted but run by the government, or at least strictly controlled in various ways. What is the situation in our present day in China?
Okay, that's a good question, CJ. Well, there are three types of churches that you can find in China. And Chris, maybe along with this I can give a little history, because it's important to understand not only what the situation is, but why the situation is the way it is.
Yes, those churches would be First Baptist Church, Second Baptist Church, and Third Baptist Church. I'm sorry.
That's right.
I'm only kidding. That's a little Baptist humor, the divisions amongst Baptists, just a little joke there. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
The first type is the easiest one to talk about, is what I would call the international church. And what that is that in the larger cities in China, the larger cities being Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, and other cities as well, but the larger cities typically, they will have usually one or two, potentially more, but typically one or two, what we call international churches. And what that is that the China government gives foreigners the right to hold their own worship services and have their own church and their own leaders. The restriction that they put on those type of churches is that only foreign passport holders can go to those churches. So this is a control implemented by the government to ensure that Chinese locals are not being, let's say, influenced by foreigners, not going in, not becoming members of churches that are led by foreigners.
And, well, going back to CJ's question, and let me add a little bit to the question with my own words. In the time that you have spent in China and the churches that you have entered into and joined the folks for worship and fellowship and so on, have you come to a point where you're absolutely certain that these are not what one would call a puppet church, like those that existed in the Soviet Union? To give you an example, I can remember, I don't know if you recall, Richard Wurmbrand. He was a Christian that was persecuted by the Soviet Union and spent years in the gulag and so forth. And he was very upset when Billy Graham visited the Soviet Union. And having been introduced to people who were involved in the government-controlled churches, the puppet churches, Richard Wurmbrand was furious because Billy Graham basically gave a report back to the United States that there was no religious persecution in the Soviet Union, and he was like, he doesn't even know what he's talking about because he was just being introduced to only the churches that were being controlled by the government. So what would be the situation there in China? Are you pretty convinced that these are relatively free people worshiping as they believe the Bible teaches them to worship, or what's going on there, in your opinion?
Well, I think as I complete the answer to CJ's question, that's going to unfold. It's a great question, Chris.
Okay.
Let me answer you a bit.
Well, actually, the only reason I started speaking was I thought there was a pause of silence there.
Yeah, I was just giving you a moment to say something if you wanted to. So that first type of church is not what they call the puppet church, right? That is the international church. It allows foreigners to have freedom. They're few and far between, of course. The disadvantage of that type of church, it's not truly a multinational church. It doesn't allow Chinese people. It excludes the main population that's local in the country. And so that was my personal dislike of attending that particular type of church. My feeling was, I'm here in China. I want to reach out to Chinese people, minister to Chinese people, befriend Chinese people, and so the church I go to has no Chinese people. So that was a difficulty for me. But the reason the China government allows that is because it gives the foreigners the freedom to worship as they wish, without having to submit to particular, restrictions. So that's the international church. That's the first type. Now there's two other types that we need to talk about. The other two types being the government-registered church, and the third type being the underground churches, or commonly called house churches. Now, I think it would be worthwhile, Chris, for me to give a bit of history on how these two types of churches developed.
Yeah, definitely.
Because if we just say, oh, those are what they are, and then kind of label them, I think it doesn't give the correct understanding. But
in fact, you will do that when we come back from our first break now, because I don't want to interrupt you in mid-sentence.
Okay.
If anyone would like to join us, again, our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com. chrisarnson@gmail.com. Please give us your first name at least, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. And please only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. Don't go away. God willing, we will be right back with Brother Joe and more of our discussion on China, facts and fiction, and getting more information about the history and theological climate of China. We'll be back after these messages. And send in your emails at chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com.
James White here, co-founder of Alpha and Omega Ministries and occasional guest on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. I'm so delighted that my friend Chris Arnzen will be heading down to Atlanta for the next G3 conference from January 17th through the 19th, 2019, where I'll be joining a very impressive lineup of speakers on the theme, A Biblical Understanding of Missions. Speakers include John Piper, Steve Lawson, Bodie Balcom, Mark Dever, Conrad Mabewe, Phil Johnson, Josh Weiss, yours truly, and many more. I hope you all join Chris and me for this phenomenal event. For more details, go to g3conference.com. That's g3conference.com.
Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio here. I want to tell you about a man I have personally known for many years. His name is Dan Buttafuoco. Dan is a personal injury and medical malpractice lawyer, but not the type that typically comes to mind. Dan cares about people and is a theologian himself. Recently, he wrote a book titled Consider the Evidence for the Bible. Ravi Zacharias wrote the foreword. Dan also has a master's degree in theology. Dan handles serious injury and medical malpractice cases in all 50 states. He represents many Christians in serious injury matters all over the country. Dan is an exceptional trial lawyer. He wrote the test for the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And currently his firm has over 100 cases that have settled for $1 million or more, and in approximately 10 different states. In Illinois, his lawyers had the fourth largest settlement in the state's history. In New York, his case involving a paralyzed police officer made the front page of the Law Journal. If you have a serious personal injury or medical malpractice claim in any state, I recommend that you call Dan. Consultations are free. There is no fee unless you win. Dan Buttafuoco's number is 1-800-669-4878. 1-800-669-4878. Or email me for Dan's contact information at chrisarnzen@gmail.com. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com.
My name is Steve Lawson, founder and president of One Passion Ministries, as well as teaching fellow for Ligonier Ministries. I serve as professor of preaching and oversee the Doctor of Ministry program at the Master's Seminary in Los Angeles. I would like to recommend the church where one of my preaching students, Andy Woodard, serves as the pastor. It's called New Covenant Church, NYC. They are a Reformed Baptist church that meets in Midtown Manhattan. You can find their service times and location on their website, which is www.ncc.nyc. They believe in a sovereign God who commands all men everywhere to repent and believe the gospel. If you're looking for a church that believes in expository preaching, which is simply biblical preaching, in New York City, I'd like to recommend that you visit New Covenant Church, NYC. Again, their information can be found at www.ncc.nyc. Have a great day.
Iron Sharpens Iron Radio is sponsored by Harvey Cedars, a year-round Bible conference and retreat center nestled on the Jersey Shore. Harvey Cedars offers a wide range of accommodations to suit groups up to 400. For generations, Christians have enjoyed gathering and growing at Harvey Cedars. Each year, thousands of high school and college students come and learn more about God's Word. An additional 9,000 come annually to Harvey Cedars as families, couples, singles, men, women, pastors, seniors, and missionaries.
90 miles from New York City, 70 miles from Philly, and 95 miles from Wilmington, and easily accessible, scores of notable Christian groups frequently plan conferences at Harvey Cedars, like the Navigators, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, Campus Crusade, and the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. Find Harvey Cedars on Facebook or at hcbible.org. hcbible.org. Call 609-494-5689. 609-494-5689. Harvey Cedars, where Christ finds people and changes lives.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bill Shishko, inviting you to tune in to A Visit to the Pastor's Study every Saturday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on WLIE Radio, www.wlie540am.com. We bring biblically faithful pastoral ministry to you, and we invite you to visit the Pastor's Study by calling in with your questions. Our time will be lively, useful, and I assure you, never dull. Join us this Saturday at 12 noon Eastern Time for A Visit to the Pastor's Study, because everyone needs a pastor.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com, and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And I want to thank each and every one of you who have been praying for Mike Gadosh, the founder of Solid Ground Christian Books. As most of you know who listen regularly are aware, Mike went in this morning to into open heart surgery. And so far, all of the reports that I have been hearing back from Mike's wife, Susie, have been extremely positive. Everything is done exactly according to plan and is going very well. We will give you a more fully detailed report on Mike either later this afternoon or Monday, but we thank God from the bottom of our hearts for guiding the surgeon's hands today and for allowing everything to happen as everyone hoped thus far. So we will keep you updated, and just want to once again thank all of you who prayed for Mike Gadosh, founder of Solid Ground Christian Books. Please continue to pray. And we will, as I said, continue to give you updates. Now we are back with our guest today, Brother Joe. And Brother Joe is separating fact from fiction when it comes to China. He is a Christian American who has lived in China. And he is also discussing China's culture and religious climate. If you'd like to join us on the air, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. 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 Please give us your first name, city and state, and country of residence if you live outside the USA. And you may wonder why I keep repeating that, to give your first name, city and state, country of residence, because you would not believe how many emails I get that just don't have any of that information. And the person isn't even requesting to be anonymous. So that's why I repeat it, because people just need to be repeated, have things repeated to them. Brother Joe, if you could pick up right where you left off, you were going to give us a history behind the the main churches, the different levels of churches or kinds of churches that exist in China.
Sure, Chris. So some of this clearly goes back hundreds of years in China, but I'll restrict my comments to, you know, roughly the last century. The ending of World War One had the signing of the Treaty of Versailles, and that was a very controversial document. And one of the controversies that regarded it was the fact that China was in strong disagreement with it, for the reason that it they believed it treated Japan favorably to China, in terms of allowing Japan access to land that China believed that belonged to China. And there was a very strong movement that began. The roots of it go back to May 4th, 1919, which was called the May 4th Movement. And this was a movement begun by a lot of young, bright, educated individuals in China who were beginning to have very anti-foreign sentiments and began protesting. That movement began to develop over time. Not long after that was the founding of the Communist Party in China. Now, at the time, the nationalists who were in power, and Sun Yat-sen was the leader of the nationalist movement. Eventually, the leader of the nationalists, a name that many would know, would become Chiang Kai-shek. Now, over time, this anti-foreigner sentiment was growing. In 1922, there was another coalition form called the Anti-Christian Federation, and that was actually influenced by secular individuals in China and had even some of its roots in the West, because in the West, we were having more and more rejection of the Christian faith. Again, this is, you know, post-Enlightenment, early now 20th century already. So, you know, for a long time now in the West, very anti-Christian sentiments had been developing, and some of those were reaching China. So the combination of this sort of anti-foreign sentiment along with an anti-Christian or anti-belief in God sentiment, a sort of intellectualism developing in China, these were leading toward you know, a general disdain toward the foreign religion of Christianity. As you know, there was a civil war that developed in China between the nationalists and the communists, and eventually the communists won that war, and in 1949 was when the communists defeated the nationalists, and it was the founding of the People's Republic of China. At that time, the nationalists fled to Taiwan under the heading of what the government was called before that, which is the Republic of China. So interesting that people need to keep those names distinguished, even though they're very close. The People's Republic of China refers to the China that we're talking about, the mainland China that, you know, we're talking about here. And then the Republic of China we more commonly call Taiwan. Now, the communists, when they came into power, had the continuations of this very anti-religious sentiment. And I personally hold the belief that communism is hostile to religion as a general principle simply because communism does not want anything that competes with the government. So anything that competes with the government for absolute authority is potentially a threat to communism. And that's true even if communism decides to tolerate religion. Even then, it will have a suspicion or a fear, if you will, of religion, because religion potentially puts a god as the number one authority over the government. So the communists, when they took power in 1949, they underwent a very quickly from there a program to get the missionaries out of China. So foreign missionaries who had been in China for so long were being removed from the country. And probably by 1953 or so, pretty much all of the foreign missionaries were gone from China. And that left Chinese, you know, but you can't eradicate Christianity, of course. That didn't remove the churches or the belief from China. That just removed the foreigners, the missionaries from China.
Well, were there efforts made to eradicate the belief in churches from China by the government?
There were, especially in Mao Zedong, who was the first chairman of China, especially did so later on in a more focused way. I would say the answer to your question is yes, but he did so in an especially focused way between 1976, between 1966 and 1976, which we call the Cultural Revolution in China. So what happened was Mao tried to have a time where he implemented his view of economic reform and social reform in China. He did so for, you know, between the period of 1949 and 1966. And then in 1966, he came to the idea that he needed to have a complete revolution of the culture. And in that culture, he decided he wanted to wipe away what he called the four olds: old customs, old culture, old habits, and old ideas. And he had said that, you know, these things were things that were poisoning the minds of the people. So at that time, they made religion completely illegal in China. And that's not just Christianity. That was all religion. So in that period from 66 to 76, and 76 was the death of Mao, so, you know, which pretty much marked the end of the Cultural Revolution and probably is the thing that caused it to come to an end, and where more liberal-minded people in the Communist Party came into power who had not so severe policies at that point. But Mao did have this 10-year period where there were these young individuals that he had recruited called Red Guards, where they would go around destroying all remnants of the old culture, and that would include destroying buildings, destroying churches, or converting churches to other uses. So the Cultural Revolution was not just against religion. It was against many different things that Mao considered to be, anti-government and anti the path that he was pursuing forward. So many Chinese, even who were not religious, were persecuted during that time. I don't want to suggest that the Cultural Revolution was against religion only. It was a much more broad and systematic thing that Mao was doing there. But it had severe consequences for religion because it was completely outlawed at that time. And it was a very dark period in China because families were routing each other out to the government, people being killed, family members betraying each other, things of that nature were happening. So
pretty much like Nazi Germany.
Yes, it became very serious at that time. Well, now, so let's take a step back, though, from that. Go back to the early founding of communism. Here you have the foreign missionaries gone, but the church is still there. The Chinese people who are believers in Christ are still there. And by the way, that includes Roman Catholics. Roman Catholicism had been in China longer than Protestantism, but they were both very heavily in the culture at that point of the Communist Revolution. Anyway, I don't want to speculate on that. But they were both very much heavily in the culture at that point. But now the foreign missionaries are gone. The Chinese church was still there. Now, there were differences of opinion among the Chinese Christians as to how to handle the situation. And there were some who initiated what they call the Three Self Patriotic Movement. And this is very important because it continues until today. Now, the Three Self Patriotic Movement came from an idea that was actually first put forth by American missionaries. There were these missionaries, Henry Venn and Rufus Anderson, who put in the late 1800s, they put forth the idea that when you establish churches, they should be self-governing, self-supporting, and self-propagating. And those are actually very sound principles that we would hold to as generally biblical, in terms of establishing churches.
Right. We don't want the government establishing our churches. And in fact, that's one of the principal things that is in the Constitution of the United States, that we will not establish a religion as a government.
Exactly. And not only that, but when you establish a church, when a missionary establishes a church, his goal as a missionary, and this is what a true missionary does, his goal as a missionary is to make that become a self-sustaining church. He's not there just doing evangelism in the culture. He is there to establish a self-sustaining church, a church that can support itself, a church that propagates the gospel itself. So that was where the concept came from. But now here you have, in the early time of the Communist Party, you have some Chinese Christians take this same concept, and what they say to the government is, look, we're going to take that concept and say this is a nationalistic concept. It means we are free of the foreigners. We don't have foreign influence in our churches. And so they took this, what otherwise might be a biblical concept of being self-governing, self-supporting, self-propagating, and they used it to be a nationalistic kind of thing in China, to say we are free from foreign influence. We are pro-China, we are pro-government. So they made proposals to the government for having a union of churches that would basically support the China government and be completely free of foreign influence. And, you can probably understand why they were thinking this way, because they're under threat of obliteration, and they're thinking of how do we survive in this environment. Now, there were other Chinese Christians who wanted nothing to do with the government. For them, the answer was to go underground completely and to not have any dealings with the government at all, not to have the government involved in religion at all. Now, so that was in 1951 that this concept of the Three Self-Patriotic Movement was put forth to the China government. And in 1954, the China government approved it. Now, the thing is, it came with certain stipulations, and this is where the concept of churches registering came from. So what would happen is that churches would be legal. They would be allowed, but they would have to register with the government. The government would have to know who they are. The government would have to approve them, and the government would have to know who's on the rolls of the church. And they would have to be completely free from any foreign influence or any foreign support. And so those would be the terms. And there were other things involved too, such as because of communist policy, they also didn't want these churches preaching from the Book of Revelation.
That's interesting.
Right, or why, and the second one is why you'll know why they don't want them preaching from Revelation. They also didn't want them preaching about the second coming of Christ.
Huh.
And you can understand why. I mean, to get to the mindset that I mentioned earlier, which is the issue is not that, strictly speaking, they oppose religion itself per se. It's the issue is there's a potential rival to the government, and so Christ now could potentially be that rival. So if you're talking about Christ coming again, this is something that potentially, at least in their minds, sets up someone who is, of authority, and someone to whom the people may even give greater authority.
Oh, great. Now you did it. We're going to have hyper-preterists sending missionaries by the thousands over to China now.
I knew you were going to say that, Chris. I thought about that before the show. I said, when I talk about this, Chris is going to mention preterism. He's going to mention preterism as a solution.
Well, actually, not as a solution. I'm disheartened that they might send people over there. I am a partial preterist, but I obviously believe in the visible, physical, bodily return of Christ and the resurrection of the dead at the last day. But
amen, so do I. Yeah, and I'm with you on that, actually, Chris. I think I agree with that. I think we're both amillennial as well.
Yes.
Well, so you can see how this was developing. Now, let me just talk a bit about the Catholic situation that was going on. The Roman Catholics, right? Now, you can imagine that there is an inherent problem with Roman Catholicism when it comes to this situation going on in China, which is that they have a head of the church who is the Pope. And in fact, they believe that this Pope can speak authoritatively. And when he speaks authoritatively, that becomes Roman Catholic dogma.
Right.
So,
and there were Americans, as you may know, who have been for centuries very leery of Roman Catholics. I probably exaggerated the length, because probably in the majority of the 20th century and 21st century, that doesn't exist too much. As far as the reasons I'm giving now, there were many Americans that were leery of Catholics because they knew that they had a head who lived in another country, Rome, and that they had to have allegiance to this foreign leader, and so therefore there was conflict. There were people who radically opposed the candidacy and election of John F. Kennedy for that reason. But anyway, I digress. If you could continue.
It's a good point, Chris. And the way to think about it is, the mindset is not, oh, let's take a look at the popes that we've seen and say, how do they seem to behave? Oh, they're not bad in terms of governmental policy, you know, stirring up revolt or anything like that. So that's not a problem. No, they don't think in terms of that. They will think in terms of what could happen. What could happen were the wrong guy to be there. And so that's more how they will think. And they will also apply some of their own historical examples, some of which I would like to talk about later, some because they're relevant to the subject, some actual events from Chinese history where they have proof cases of their own, of where things have gone awry. And so they will think in those terms. Well, okay, what would it mean if that Pope actually ended up being a bad guy? You know, and they're not.
What do you mean, what if?
I'm talking politically here.
All right, well, even on that score.
In that comment.
I mean, there are many people who think he's a Marxist and communist and so on, but anyway.
Yeah.
Yep. Not that they would be bothered by that in China.
Yep. But you make a good correction of me there. But it's also important to understand that they really don't think doctrine. They think politics and behavior of people and potential for people to gather and congregate and form a movement, because that's how revolutions in China happen.
In fact, we have to pick up right where we left off, because now we have to go to our midway break. It's longer than most breaks because Grace Life Radio 90.1 FM in Lake City, Florida requires of us this long break between our two major segments, because they air their own commercials and public service announcements, some of which are required by the FCC because they have to localize the program to Lake City, Florida. But if you have any questions, take this time to write them now for Brother Joe. And the email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com, chrisarnson@gmail.com. And please also write down the information of our advertisers, because the more you patronize our advertisers, the longer they are likely to remain our advertisers. And that means the longer we are likely to remain on the air, because we depend on our advertisers to exist due to the money involved in sponsoring this program. So, once again, if you have a question for Brother Joe on China, our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com. chrisarnson@gmail.com. Give us your first name, city and state, and country of residence if you live outside the USA. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Brother Joe and more on China, separating fact from fiction.
Back together again, yeah. Back together again. Hi, Phil Johnson here. I'm executive director of John MacArthur's media ministry, Grace to You. And I'm also an occasional guest on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. So I'm delighted that my friend Chris Arnzen and I will be heading down to Atlanta for the G3 conference, where I'll be joining James White, Steve Lawson, Vodi Balcom, Mark Dever, Conrad Mbewe, Todd Friel, Josh Bice, and a host of other speakers to address the topic of biblical understanding of missions. Chris Arnzen and I hope to see you all at this very important conference. From January 17th through the 19th, make sure you stop by the Iron Sharpens Iron exhibitors booth to say hi to Chris. For more details, go to g3conference.com. That's g3conference.com. See you there.
Tired of box store Christianity, of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times, 631-929-3512, or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new topical reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Whichever edition you choose, trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Hi, I'm Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, here to tell you about an exciting offer from World Magazine, my trusted source for news from a Christian perspective. Try World at no charge for 90 days and get a free copy of R.C. Sproul's book, Relationship Between Church and State. I rely on World because I trust the reporting. I gain insight from the analysis. And World provides clarity to the news stories that really matter. I believe you'll also find World to be an invaluable resource to better understand critical topics with a depth that's simply not found in other media outlets. Armed with this coverage, World can help you to be a voice of wisdom in your family and your community. This trial includes bi-weekly issues of World Magazine, on-scene reporting from World Radio, and the fully shareable content of World Digital. Simply visit wmg.org/ironsharpens to get your world trial and Dr. Sproul's book all free. No obligation with no credit card required. Visit World News Group at wmg.org/ironsharpens today.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Iron Sharpens Iron welcomes Solid Rock Remodeling to our family of sponsors. Serving South Central Pennsylvania, Solid Rock Remodeling is focused on discovering, understanding, and exceeding your expectations. They deliver personalized project solutions with exceptional results. Solid Rock Remodeling offers a full range of home renovations, including kitchen and bath remodeling, decks, porches, windows and doors, roof and siding, and more. For a clear, detailed professional estimate, call this trustworthy team of problem solvers who provide superior results that stand the test of time. Call Solid Rock Remodeling at 717-697-1981. 717-697-1981. Or visit solidrockremodeling.com. That's solidrockremodeling.com. Solid Rock Remodeling, bringing new life to your home.
My name is Steve Lawson, founder and president of One Passion Ministries, as well as teaching fellow for Ligonier Ministries. I serve as professor of preaching and oversee the Doctor of Ministry program at the Master's Seminary in Los Angeles. I would like to recommend the church where one of my preaching students, Andy Woodard, serves as the pastor. It's called New Covenant Church, NYC. They are a Reformed Baptist church that meets in Midtown Manhattan. You can find their service times and location on their website, which is www.ncc.nyc. They believe in a sovereign God who commands all men everywhere to repent and believe the gospel. If you're looking for a church that believes in expository preaching, which is simply biblical preaching, in New York City, I'd like to recommend that you visit New Covenant Church, NYC. Again, their information can be found at www.ncc.nyc. Have a great day.
Listening to Christian radio can be a big gamble spiritually. Even many of the major Christian networks that include excellent, biblically faithful teachers on their lineup sadly often also include the worst of doctrinally dangerous heretics. If you are a lover of the doctrines of sovereign grace, you need not fear listening 24 hours a day to firstloveradio.org. They feature Christ-centered programming from Reformed pastors and teachers you can rely upon for theological soundness and biblical faithfulness, such as Dr. W.R. Downing, Dr. Peter Masters, Pastor Joe Jackowitz, Pastor Robert Gifford, Al Martin, Edward Del Cor, and more. FirstLoveRadio.org also live streams my Iron Sharpens Iron radio program daily. Please stick around on FirstLoveRadio.org after Iron Sharpens Iron radio is over to continue being blessed by the unwavering proclamation of the gospel of sovereign grace. Spread the word about FirstLoveRadio.org.
Every day at thousands of community centers, high schools, middle schools, juvenile institutions, coffee shops, and local hangouts, Long Island Youth for Christ staff and volunteers meet with young people who need Jesus. We are rural and urban, and we are always about the message of Jesus. Our mission is to have a noticeable spiritual impact on Long Island, New York, by engaging young people in the lifelong journey of following Christ. Long Island Youth for Christ has been a stalwart bedrock ministry since 1959. We have a world-class staff and a proven track record of bringing consistent love and encouragement to youths in need all over the country and around the world. Help honor our history by becoming a part of our future. Volunteer, donate, pray, or all of the above. For details, call Long Island Youth for Christ at 631-385-8333. That's 631-385-8333. Or visit liyfc.org. That's liyfc.org.
Got to tell you, for my money, Chris Arnzen's radio program is just the best.
Iron. Criticizing Iron.
I think that's what it's called. This is Todd Friel of Wretched Radio and TV with Phil Johnson of Grace to You, inviting everybody to come to the G3 conference, which has almost instantly become one of the best conferences in the country.
And it is. It's a great conference. I love it. And Chris Arnson was there last year. He's been there, I think, every year. It's great to see him there. You and I actually did some recordings in the lobby at that place, which
so
is a highlight
for
me.
Tons of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Tons of great speakers. And no matter where you are in the building, you will hear Chris Arnson's laugh. And that's worth the price of admission alone. If you would like to join Phil, me, Chris, and a cavalcade of great preachers, so it should be a cavalcade of great preachers, and me, G3Conference.com, G3Conference.com.
Hi, I'm Buzz Taylor, frequent co-host with Chris Arnson on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. I would like to introduce you to my good friends Todd and Patty Jennings at CVBBS, which stands for Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service. Todd and Patty specialize in supplying Reformed and Puritan books and Bibles at discount prices that make them affordable to everyone. Since 1987, the family-owned and operated book service has sought to bring you the best available Christian books and Bibles at the best possible prices. Unlike other book sites, they make no effort to provide every book that is available because, frankly, much of what is being printed is not worth your time. That means you can get to the good stuff faster. It also means that you don't have to worry about being assaulted by the pornographic, heretical, and otherwise faith-insulting material promoted by the secular book vendors. Their website is cvbbs.com. Browse the pages at ease, shop at your leisure, and purchase with confidence as Todd and Patty work in service to you, the church, and to Christ. That's Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service at cvbbs.com. That's cvbbs.com. Let Todd and Patty know that you heard about them on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And you can call toll-free at 800-656-0231, 800-656-0231, Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. Eastern Time to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. There's no voicemail on that phone line, so if nobody answers, call back the next day. If indeed it is a weekday between 10 a.m. through 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time, obviously, you could order online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year at cvbbs.com. If you order $50 or more worth of merchandise, and you mention Chris Arnson of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, you will receive absolutely free of charge the book From Pride to Humility by Stuart Scott, a publication of Focus Publishing. And you will also receive free shipping on your entire order of $50 or more. Before we return to our guest, Brother Joe, as we separate fact from fiction in regard to China and learn more about its culture and theological climate, both past and present, we just have a couple of announcements to make. First of all, there's some exciting events coming up. On Friday, September 7th, 6:30 p.m., at the Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in Jacksonville, Florida, their Jacksonville campus, I am involved in orchestrating an event with my dear friend of many years, Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries, and his dear friend, Dr. Michael L. Brown of the Line of Fire program. They are going to be lecturing at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary on the theme, A House Mended, Christian Unity in a Culture of Outrage. If you want more details about this event, go to one of the church websites that is sponsoring this event with me. That's SwitzerlandCommunityChurch.org, SwitzerlandCommunityChurch.org. Then, at Switzerland Community Church the next night, 6:30 p.m. as well, there is a formal debate. Dr. James R. White and Dr. Michael L. Brown are on the same team, and they will be debating two advocates of homosexuality within Christianity. The theme is homosexuality consistent with New Testament obedience? And the debaters include, on the other side, Reverend Ruth Jensen Forbell and Pastor Dwayne J. Robinson. This, as I said, is being held again at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time at Switzerland Community Church on Saturday, the 8th of September. If you want more details, go to SwitzerlandCommunityChurch.org, SwitzerlandCommunityChurch.org. Then coming up on November 9th and 10th, the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals is having their annual Quakertown Conference on Reformed Theology. The theme is The Glory of the Cross, and the speakers include David Garner, Ray Ortland, Richard Phillips, Timothy Gibson, and Carlton Wynn. It's being held at the Grace Bible Fellowship Church of Quakertown. If you would like to join me there, November 9th and the 10th, I will be manning an exhibitor's booth for Iron Sharpens Iron Radio there, God willing. Go to AllianceNet.org, AllianceNet.org, click on events, and then scroll down to Quakertown Conference on Reformed Theology. Then coming up in January the 17th through the 19th, which is a Thursday through Saturday, the G3 Conference returns to Atlanta, Georgia, more specifically College Park, Georgia, a suburb of Atlanta, at the Georgia International Convention Center. This January, the theme is The Mission of God, a Biblical Understanding of Missions. This is my third Iron Sharpens Iron Radio exhibitor's booth at the G3 Conference, which stands for Gospel, Grace, and Glory. And, by the way, there is a Spanish and bilingual event that is being held on Wednesday, January 16th. If you are a Spanish-speaking person or if you know of Spanish-speaking and bilingual people who would like to attend, it is Wednesday, January 16th. But for the English-speaking conference from the 17th through the 19th, the speakers include Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries, Paul Washer, John Piper, Stephen J. Lawson, Vody Balcom, Mark Dever, Conrad M. Bayway, Tim Challies, Phil Johnson, of the executive director of John MacArthur's ministry, Grace to You, Todd Friel of Wretched TV and Wretched Radio, Stephen J. Nichols, the president of Reformation Bible College, the college founded by the late R.C. Sproul in Ligonier Ministries, and many more are on that lineup. If you'd like to register, go to g3conference.com, g3conference.com, and I would strongly suggest that you also, if you have a business or a parachurch ministry that you want to promote to a large audience, they are expecting between 4,000 and 5,000 people, so I strongly urge you to register also for an exhibitor's booth if you have something worthy of promoting to the body of Christ. Go to g3conference.com, g3conference.com. Please tell all of these organizations that you heard about their events from Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Last but not least, if you love the show, you don't want it to go away, you share the Iron Sharpens Iron Radio MP3s with family, friends, and loved ones, you look forward to the guests and topics that we discuss on a daily basis, many of which you will never hear anywhere else, then please go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now. You could donate instantly with a debit or credit card. If you prefer snail mail, if you want to mail us a check, an address will appear on the screen where you can send a check made out to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. And please never siphon money away from your regular giving to your local church in order to give to Iron Sharpens Iron. Never put your family in financial jeopardy in order to give to Iron Sharpens Iron. Providing for your church and family are two commands of God. So only give to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio if you are financially blessed above and beyond your ability to obey those two biblical commands, providing for church and home. And if you can give to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, I urge you, I plead with you to please give as much as you can and as frequently as you can, because we rely upon your donations and the advertising dollars of our sponsors to remain on the air. If you do want to advertise, send us an email to chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com, and put advertising in the subject line. As long as whatever it is you're promoting is compatible with what we believe, we would love to help you launch an ad campaign, because we truly do need those advertising dollars. And by the way, that's also the email address you can use to send a question for Brother Joe about China separating fact from fiction. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us your first name, city and state, and country of residence, and please only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. And we are back with Brother Joe. And Brother Joe, before the break, as you may recall, you were talking about the political reasons that seem to be the primary cause for the Chinese government to be suspicious about Roman Catholics, because they swear an allegiance to a pope, which is a leader in a foreign country.
Yes. So, and this will work in with my, hopefully, finally answering CJ's question. there was a formation of a Catholic association that happened in 1957 as a response to this concern. It was called the Chinese Patriotic Catholic Association, CPCA. And what this was similar to what the Protestants had done with the Three Self-Patriotic Movement. This group of Catholics said that they were willing to not have ties with the Vatican. And so in that case, they would be allowed to be legalized in China. In this case, the appointment of bishops, instead of coming from the hierarchy in the Vatican, would come from bishops who were in China, other Chinese bishops. In addition to that, they would not be allowed to object to government policies, China government policies, and they would not be allowed to acknowledge any of the Vatican's post-1949 dogma or doctrine. So under those stipulations, the Catholic churches in China were allowed to also form an association and be legalized. And those Catholic churches that were unwilling to do that, then similarly with to the Protestant churches, they went underground. So what this results in is that you have a legalized Protestant church in China, which is under the umbrella of the Three Self-Patriotic Movement, a legalized Catholic church in China, which is under the Chinese Patriotic Catholic Association, and then you have underground churches, which can be either Protestant or Catholic, those who would not agree to those type of stipulations. And those are what form the churches that you see now. Now, in terms of Chinese regulation, Chinese regulations allow five religions in China. The Christian Protestant religion, the Christian Catholic religion, Buddhism, Taoism, and the fifth is, what is the fifth?
Hinduism?
No, not Hinduism. Taoism, Buddhism.
Shintoism? Swedenborgianism?
I'm going to think
Arminianism?
I'm going to think of it in a second.
Well, you can come back to that.
Yeah, I'll come back to it. I think there's five and not four. I'm pretty sure there's five.
So you're saying that Hinduism is illegal in China?
Yes, Hinduism is not an acknowledged religion.
Really?
By the China government. Neither is Jehovah's Witnesses are not allowed. Mormonism is not allowed in China. Only what they consider to be those religions that had historic, historic acceptance, and scriptural basis.
Okay, I'm trying to think of what that other religion could be. You got my curiosity brewing here, but let me know when you have completed a thought, because I do want to try to get some listener questions in.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Islam, of course.
Oh, that's acceptable. Okay, that is interesting because, and I'll bring that to your attention. Well, let me bring it up now, if you don't mind.
Sure.
We have Arnie in Perry County, Pennsylvania, who says, I have heard it confirmed from Florida Senator Marco Rubio that the Chinese government has detained possibly millions of Muslims in China, and these would be Chinese Muslims, not foreign Muslims, who are immigrants there. Does this mean that the Chinese government is also going to be preparing to be heavy-handed with Christians as well, in your opinion?
So let me say it this way. The China government puts religious regulations for all five of those religions, Islam included, under the same umbrella. So to the China government, they don't distinguish theologies of these religions. They don't compare and say that one is inherently better than the other. China has a large portion of minorities who are Muslim. They are part of the Chinese heritage, part of long-standing Chinese heritage. So it is not illegal to be a Muslim in China. I had some friends in China who are Muslims, who are also people who I worked with. So it is not illegal to be Muslim. Being Muslim by itself does not invite persecution. So, you know, when these type of incidents happen, there is typically something going on that's a spark for it. For example, there are disputed territories in China. Tibet is a very disputed territory, and there's been a lot of issues with that. But that's mostly Buddhism. But there's another province called Xinjiang in China, which is primarily Buddhist. They call them the Uyghur people. They're primarily Buddhist, and there are also, Muslims. They're primarily Muslims. And there are Muslims as well in some of the southern provinces in China, where a large portion of the province would be Muslim. So, you know, Islam is allowed, and, you know, being a Muslim in itself would not merit such a thing. But more generally, to answer the question, the religious climate, it has been tightening in China, and that is true. And if you want, we can talk about it, Chris. There have been certain incidents that have concerned the Chinese government, and you know whether they overreact to these things or not is one thing. But over time, there have been incidents that sort of color the way the Chinese government thinks about religion. And again, it's not strictly speaking that they're thinking about the theology. They're more thinking about where would the population potentially go with it in terms of organizing and in terms of potentially causing disturbance among society or disturbance in terms of where they want to bring the communist program and agenda.
By the way, can you clarify, if you know, why is it that the Chinese government has detained possibly millions of Muslims?
I don't know the incident to which he's specifically referring, but I know there are disputes over territory, for example, in parts of China. So, you know, I don't want to necessarily confuse that kind of a thing, which that might be, with what's going on in terms of religion. You know, in other words, there are minorities in China who are a particular religion. Now, the fact that they are that religion, you know, and they live in a certain area of China. Now, that area may be disputed. The fact that they are that religion does not necessarily mean that that religion itself, per se, is the issue. There can be other things going on. You know, for example, the region is disputed, the leadership of the region is disputed, or something of that nature. And so, you know, you have to look at each incident as its own incident and not necessarily assume that it's a form of religious persecution. And this is where we can be a little too harsh at times, even against the China government. You know, you want to be sure you know the facts of each situation before making an assessment that it qualifies as religious persecution. And I'm not saying that the listener did. I'm just speaking generally because it's a good thing to be aware of.
Okay. Did you want to move on with that same issue, or do you want me to take another listener question?
Well, why don't I give you like a couple of incidents that have happened?
Sure, sure, definitely.
And then take a listener question. Because, you know, these incidents may give some insight into why the government gets concerned. In the mid-1850s, right around the time we had our civil war going on here, there was a very large rebellion in China, and it began with one individual, a man. His name was Hong Xiuquan. And this man believed himself to be the Chinese son of God and the younger brother of Jesus. And he was able to get himself a following. And that group grew and eventually became quite a large group. They called themselves the Taiping Heavenly Kingdom. And eventually there was a revolution between them and the Qing government in China. It was probably one of the largest civil wars ever in history.
Wow.
They were by the time this thing reached its full climax, the people who were underneath this cultic leader were about 30 million strong. And, estimates are, anywhere from like 20 to 70 million people who died in this civil war uprising. So, now here you have an individual who's calling himself the brother of Jesus. And, that's not like the only type of incident of something like that. More recently, there's been, in China, there's a cult. And I think this cult may have much to do with the recent tightening of the Chinese law in regard to religion, but there's this cult called the Eastern Lightning Cult, sometimes called the Church of Almighty God, and it began with in the early 1990s, with a Chinese woman who claimed to be the second coming of Jesus. So she's a woman, but she's claiming herself to be God incarnate, God Almighty, the second coming of Jesus.
And always a good red light that should go off in your mind.
Well, that's the thing, Chris. You would think so, right? You would think so. And yet, this woman was able to gain quite a following. And so here you have, and this is why we have to, we need to take away some themes from our discussion today. And one of the themes is the tremendous need in China for good, sound teaching of the Bible. Because it's only when people don't know the Bible that they can be deceived by these kind of things. And so one of the disadvantages of having, a culture that has come out of a mysticism, folk religions where there was a lot of ancestor worship and where there was a lot of mysticism, coming over time, couple that with a lack of education among a large part of the population, and add to that the fact that they're not taught the Bible well. They haven't been exposed to sound teachers of the Bible where they understand the scriptures in the way that we would, things that we would take for granted. So when people come to them with these kind of messages, they're not aware at first hearing, that there's something very wrong with this message. They're not aware of it. So this woman and her followers were able to build up quite a following, and that cult persists until today. Now, the Chinese government claims that they're roughly 3 to 4 million strong, this cult of follow. And I believe that the woman and other leaders of that religion have exiled themselves, possibly to the United States even. But they still run this religion. And the China government has accused them of a lot of things. Now, it's not clear whether they've in fact done all those things that they've been accused of. But one of the main things that they've been accused of is this McDonald's cult murder that happened in 2014, May of 2014, where a woman was killed by alleged followers of this cult. What we know for sure is that they were followers of some cult who attacked this woman.
And this was at a McDonald's franchise?
Yes, a real McDonald's franchise location where individuals from a cult, and it's alleged by the China government to be that cult, entered that McDonald's and were claimed themselves to be missionaries and were evangelizing individuals in that McDonald's, and they were asking for contact information, and supposedly one of the women that they asked, who they asked for the contact information, did not give it to them, and they had some sort of altercation, and they began to beat her with a broomstick in McDonald's, and the woman died.
Wow.
So now this incident, now whether it truly happened that way and whether it really was that cult, these things are hard for outsiders to know and prove. But the point is that these type of things are part of how the Chinese government may be thinking about religions. In other words, what is the potential danger of people getting it wrong, of people going astray? So things like this have been going on.
And now we have to go to our last break. It's going to be a lot briefer than the last one. If anybody wants to send in a question, do it now because we're rapidly running out of time. ChrisArnson@gmail.com. ChrisArnson@gmail.com. Don't go away. God willing, we'll be back after these messages with more of Brother Joe and our discussion on China.
One sure way all Iron Sharpens Iron radio listeners can help keep my show on the air is to support my advertisers. I know you all use batteries every day, so I'm urging you all from now on to exclusively use BatteryDepot.com for all your battery needs. At BatteryDepot.com, they're changing the status quo. They're flipping the script. They're sticking it to the man. In other words, they'd like to change the battery industry for good by providing an extensive inventory of top-of-the-line batteries that are uniformly new, dependable, and affordable. Ordering from BatteryDepot.com ensures you'll always get fresh out-of-the-box batteries you can count on to work properly at competitive prices. Whether you need batteries for cordless phones, cell phones, radios, PCs, laptops, tablets, baby monitors, hearing aids, smoke detectors, credit card readers, digital cameras, electronic cigarettes, GPSs, MP3 players, watches, or nearly anything else you own that needs batteries, go to BatteryDepot.com. Next day shipping available. All products protected by 30-day guarantees and 6-month warranties. Call 866-403-3768. That's 866-403-3768. Or go to BatteryDepot.com. That's BatteryDepot.com.
James White here, co-founder of Alpha and Omega Ministries and occasional guest on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. I'm so delighted that my friend Chris Arnson will be heading down to Atlanta for the next G3 conference from January 17th to the 19th, 2019, where I'll be joining a very impressive lineup of speakers on the theme, A Biblical Understanding of Missions. Speakers include John Piper, Steve Lawson, Vodi Balcom, Mark Dever, Conrad Mabewe, Phil Johnson, Josh Weiss, yours truly, and many more. I hope you all join Chris and me for this phenomenal event. For more details, go to g3conference.com. That's g3conference.com.
My name is Steve Lawson, founder and president of One Passion Ministries, as well as teaching fellow for Ligonier Ministries. I serve as professor of preaching and oversee the Doctor of Ministry program at the Master's Seminary in Los Angeles. I would like to recommend the church where one of my preaching students, Andy Woodard, serves as the pastor. It's called New Covenant Church, NYC. They are a Reformed Baptist church that meets in Midtown Manhattan. You can find their service times and location on their website, which is www.ncc.nyc. They believe in a sovereign God who commands all men everywhere to repent and believe the gospel. If you're looking for a church that believes in expository preaching, which is simply biblical preaching, in New York City, I'd like to recommend that you visit New Covenant Church, NYC. Again, their information can be found at www.ncc.nyc. Have a great day.
Have you been blessed by Iron Sharpens Iron Radio? We remain on the air because of our faithful sponsors and because of listeners like you. There are four ways you can help. First, do you know potential sponsors who may wish to advertise their goods or services on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio? Second, whenever possible, purchase the products or use the services that our sponsors advertise, and then let them know that you heard about them on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Thirdly, you can also donate to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio by going to our website at ironsharpensironradio.com and click support at the top of the page. But most importantly, keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio in your prayers. We hope that Iron Sharpens Iron Radio blesses you for many years to come.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island, is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ
in fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Waldeman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402. Or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
Listening to Christian radio can be a big gamble spiritually. Even many of the major Christian networks that include excellent, biblically faithful teachers on their lineup sadly often also include the worst of doctrinally dangerous heretics. If you are a lover of the doctrines of sovereign grace, you need not fear listening 24 hours a day to firstloveradio.org. They feature Christ-centered programming from Reformed pastors and teachers you can rely upon for theological soundness and biblical faithfulness, such as Dr. W.R. Downing, Dr. Peter Masters, Pastor Joe Jackowitz, Pastor Robert Gifford, Al Martin, Edward Del Cor, and more. FirstLoveRadio.org also live streams my Iron Sharpens Iron radio program daily. Please stick around on FirstLoveRadio.org after Iron Sharpens Iron Radio is over to continue being blessed by the unwavering proclamation of the gospel of sovereign grace. Spread the word about FirstLoveRadio.org.
Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." Hi, I'm Mark Lukens, pastor of Providence Baptist Church. We are a Reformed Baptist church, and we hold to the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. We are in Norfolk, Massachusetts. We strive to reflect Paul's mindset to be much more concerned with how God views what we say and what we do than how men view these things. That's not the best recipe for popularity, but since that wasn't the apostles' priority, it must not be ours either. We believe, by God's grace, that we are called to demonstrate love and compassion to our fellow man, and to be vessels of Christ's mercy to a lost and hurting community around us, and to build up the body of Christ in truth and love. If you live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or plan to visit our area, please come and join us for worship and fellowship. You can call us at 508-528-5750, that's 508-528-5750, or go to our website to email us, listen to past sermons, worship songs, or watch our TV program entitled Resting in Grace. You can find us at providencebaptistchurchma.org, that's providencebaptistchurchma.org, or even on sermonaudio.com. Providence Baptist Church is delighted to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Thrivent Financial is not your typical financial services provider. As a membership organization, we help Christians be wise with money and live generously every day. And for the fourth year in a row, we were named one of the world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute, a leading international think tank dedicated to the creation, advancement, and sharing of best practices in business ethics. Contact me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433 to learn more about the Thrivent Difference.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Lending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen. If you just tuned us in, our guest today for the entirety of the program is Brother Joe, and we are talking about China separating fact from fiction. If you'd like to join us on the air with a question, I would do it now because we're rapidly running out of time. ChrisArnson@gmail.com, ChrisArnson@gmail.com. And Joe, if you could pick up where you left off, and then we will try to get to as many of our listeners waiting as we possibly can fit into the time.
Okay. Why don't I just close out what I was saying before? The incidents I mentioned them for a reason, which is to highlight the thought that we need missionaries to go to China. We need sound teaching in China, as I've mentioned. It's so important, and so I encourage everyone to pray about that. And you know, if there are young people listening, to think about whether you might go. There are many opportunities to share the gospel in China. And the second reason I mention it is I don't like to draw attention to that one cult itself. I've met some of those individuals, and what I found is they were very peaceful individuals. I don't think that cult itself is violent in any way. If that incident did occur, I think it's probably an isolated incident. But the reason these things are important is because they create a perception. And really, it's the perception sometimes that matters in the way policy is made and in the way religion is viewed. And so that's another thing to pray about, is that these type of things that really happen as very unusual, strange incidents, or cults are active, things of that nature, would not give the Christian church in China a bad name. I've had many Chinese compliment me on being a Christian, say how highly they thought of me because of my Christian beliefs and practice and the way I treated them. And that's really the Christianity that we want to see portrayed in China. But there are also these cults that emerge, and there are also these strange teachings that occur. And so there's this, you know, competition going on. So long as the sound teaching is not brought into a large percentage of that Christian population, I think we're going to continue to see this kind of thing happening.
Okay, well, we have Susan Margaret in Dauphin County, Pennsylvania, and she wants to know if it's fact or fiction that you should not put your grandmother's china in a microwave. Well, that's a different kind of china. I'm only kidding. She didn't ask that. Her real question is, what can the average Christian expect when they arrive on the shores of China? Should they expect to freely pass out tracts on street corners? Are most Christian activities done openly without fear of persecution and prosecution? Or are there things that still need to be done covertly and secretively?
That's a very good question. So generally speaking, what the China government cares about is organized religion. So if there are groups that are organizing and those organizations become very large, that's where they may begin to draw attention. The China government is very well aware of the underground churches. There are many of them. Probably more than half of the Christians in China are in underground churches. It's not something that the China government is unaware of, and it's not something that they could not find out if they really wanted to. If the China government wanted to put the resources into finding these individuals, they could do it. So the situation in China has been one of tolerance. They're aware of it, so long as the groups of individuals who congregate in these underground house churches are small enough and are not making waves and are not drawing attention to themselves, the government generally leaves them alone. Now, you have to couple that with the fact that China not only has the central government, the central communist government, but every locality also has its own government. So the local conditions dictated by the local governments also become very important in terms of what is allowable and what is not. But generally speaking, you as an individual would not have any problem sharing your faith with your friends, sharing it openly. If you are evangelizing, it's probably not wise to do it very openly in front of many people, such as handing out tracts in the open. That probably would draw attention. That's generally not done. Evangelism is generally done in private and generally done among people you meet or know. But having said that, speaking of your faith, sharing your faith with your friends, colleagues, coworkers, those things are generally fine and not, not scrutinized in any kind of way.
Now, let's say a pastor is preaching about the sins of atheism or something to that effect, calling upon the government to repent of atheism, asking people in the congregation to pray that the leaders of China become saved by the mercy of God and become Christians and abandon their atheism, that kind of thing. Would that be considered, a traitorism? Or how would that be viewed?
That would be considered subversive. So that kind of talk would probably, if it occurs, would only be happening in underground churches. You would never see that kind of speech happening in government-registered churches. The simple reason being that government-registered churches are very easily monitored for that kind of speech. So I think this goes back to one of the listeners' questions earlier, to what degree is a church considered, he said a puppet church. I don't like to use that terminology. I think it's too strong. Churches which are publicly registered certainly do need to be very cautious in terms of the language that they use, especially as regards issues of politics. So they will not be speaking openly on issues like that. And you will hear the gospel preached, by the way, in case people have that question. You will hear the gospel preached in government-registered churches. It's not that the gospel is absent. You know, sometimes it becomes a matter of things that are not said, less so than the things that are said being wrong.
Okay, let's see here. We have John in Bangor, Maine, who wants to know. He says, I'm sorry I tuned in late. I was wondering, what was the difference between how Christians may have been persecuted before the rise of communism in China, persecution, I'm speaking of particularly perhaps by those of native religions in China, other than Christianity, and when the rise of communism came? Was there any different level of severity of persecution? Was one more severe than the other?
Well, the primary difference would be the government sponsoring of whatever is going on. So, post-communism, and particularly if you think of the Cultural Revolution, whatever was happening against individuals and churches was sanctioned by the government. So that would be, potentially one difference. That doesn't mean all prior governments were pro-Christian, but there's a particular focus that happened after 1949. But that's not to say that there was not persecution of Christians prior to that. If you look at, I would recommend people to read about Hudson Taylor, who was in China from the mid-1800s to the early 1900s, and he had a lot of difficulties in his mission in China, and he had a lot of successes. So, there were times where he encountered them when they looked at how he dressed, they called him a black devil because he was dressing differently from the way they were dressing. And that was one thing that caused Hudson Taylor to change the way he dressed.
And he got the heat from American Christians for that. Or was it British?
That's true. Primarily British, probably, but perhaps also Americans. But, yes, he changed the way he dressed to match the Chinese customs. And I believe he had a right way of viewing it, which is, there are some things about culture that are not strictly, that the Bible would be neutral about.
I guess the long ponytail might have been up for grabs on that one. unless you're in the PCA. But anyway, we have Harrison in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, who wants to know what is the most thriving theological group or denomination or association or fellowship amongst Christians in China?
The most thriving?
Yes.
If recent estimates, recent reasonable, we have China government estimates, which it's hard to say exactly where they land with respect to precise reality, but we have recent estimates from, say, 2010 to 2011 about how many Christians are in China, and some of those go very high. Estimates you see, and even if you read the books, estimates will go high, into well above 100 million, and then some estimates will go low into below 20 million. And so the truth is somewhere in the middle. And I saw some reasonable, what looked to me upon reading it, were some reasonable estimates in the 2010-2011 time frame of there being in the range of, say, 60 million or so total Christians in China at that time. And so, consider that on a population of 1.4 billion, about 60 million Christians. Now, if you look at those, now Christians, that would include Roman Catholics. There may be 9 million Roman Catholics in that number. So, I'm sorry, no, that it's about 67 without the Roman Catholics. So, 67 with the Roman Catholics, 67. So if you take out 9 million Roman Catholics from that, that would put you at about 58 million Protestants in China at that time. And more than, I would say about well over half of those were in house churches. So probably the underground house church movement in China is the dominant Christian form of religion. But the largest religion in China by far is Buddhism. Buddhism had entered China in the early centuries after the coming of Christ, and Taoism also entered in a similar time period, but Buddhism very quickly became the dominant religion, possibly because it rather than Christianity, it more easily aligned with Chinese local folk beliefs and superstitions, I would say. So Buddhism, in other words, became a much easier and more convenient religion for them to believe and syncretize with their local traditions. Christianity, on the contrary, would be a religion that very much conflicts or contradicts some of those things that they believe, such as ancestor worship, such as burning money to your dead ancestors so that they can buy riches in the afterlife, things of that nature that would have been practiced in the Chinese culture. So Buddhism, took more rapidly and earlier, much earlier than Christianity, and for that reason is the dominant religion in China.
We have Ronald in Eastern Suffolk County, Long Island, New York. Ronald in Eastern Suffolk County, Long Island, New York says, if things are as free as you say they are in China, why does an underground church exist and why is it the most flourishing?
Am I coming across as saying it's free? Wow.
Well, you basically were saying that as long as you're not doing things that are drawing too much attention to yourself, unless you're not passing out tracts in public or contradicting the government, being communist, being communist.
Got it. Yeah, that's actually a good question, and it's following up on my answer to the previous question. I understand now. So that gives me something important to talk about. So keep in mind now, the government registered churches, which if you want to be a Christian in line with government law, you would have to attend the government-registered church as opposed to an underground church. But remember, to do so means that you're accepting certain conditions. So you will have freedom within those conditions. You will have the freedom to go to church every Sunday and go home, and nobody is going to hinder you. But you will not have the freedom to have a Sunday school where you teach children about the Bible. You will not have the freedom to have political discussions in the church that are disagreeing with government policies. Remember the things we said earlier about preaching certain aspects of Christ's return, Christ's lordship, the emphasis of Christ's lordship, which may be underemphasized in those churches because of political sensitivities. You have to submit to a certain degree of monitoring of your religion. You have to, if you're on the membership rolls, then you're going to be known to be a Christian officially. And things of that nature are, and then how does that play with you being in a communist society if there's ever trouble? So, you know, these things are potentially big concerns for people. So, you know, every person, now this is not just for Chinese Christians, but everyone in China is, that I know, my friends, and even when I was there, you're very aware that there is a powerful government above you and that you don't contradict that government. You don't. And you're living in that situation, and the more that's known about you, you know, and the more you're associated with that open church, you're going to be restricting yourself in some ways and also making yourself known in other ways. And so many Christians, but you know, choose to be in underground churches. But I would say the primary reason has to do with their belief that to be theologically pure and to be able to teach the Bible in an unadulterated way, they have to be in a church that has no restrictions.
Okay, we have Lou from Sharpsburg, Georgia. I have heard that there is widespread women leadership in the Chinese churches. Is that because the Chinese Christian men are not stepping up or some other reason?
First of all, yes, it's true. In the Chinese registered churches, I've been to many of them, and if you look at the eldership in those churches, you will find almost universally that roughly 50% or more is female. That was a surprising fact to me when I moved and lived in China, but that is the fact, and it's pretty much universal. The same is true for the seminaries in China. The students who are at the seminaries, it's roughly half and half, if not even more weighted toward females. There can be multiple reasons for it. I tend to think that China has Mao Zedong, you know, the first chairman of China, I think he empowered women in certain ways that were to his political advantage. And women have a lot of power in the Chinese culture. They're not, like we may portray them in the movies here in the West. They do have a lot of power in the culture. They have a lot of power in the family. The only place you don't see them having a lot of power is in the top echelons of government. Where you'll see the dominant, you'll see it dominated by men. But I think it's partly because of the way Mao empowered women for his own political advantage, partly because of the way the culture has empowered women in the home and in society, and partly, yes, because men over time have not stepped up to do the things that they should do. And I've had discussions with women pastors where I was showing them why biblically they should not be in that position. And they said to me, "But if I don't do it, no one will."
Well, we have to go on to our final question now. Johnny from Queens, New York, with so many fringe quote unquote Christian ministries, that's fringe ministries, outreaches, I think he meant to say, influencing Chinese churches with unbiblical experiences and teachings, how can the West be used to equip the underground Chinese church with more faithful biblical teaching to ground them in a solid biblical understanding?
Well, first of all, we have to send missionaries. We have to send qualified pastors. That's one thing. We have to also do training of Chinese leaders. I think training of Chinese leaders is incredibly important. I've seen some of that done, but there needs to be much more done. And Chinese leaders are very open to being trained by Western men who have more experience than they do. So I think that's one thing we need to do more of, ultimately sending people who are qualified, biblically qualified pastors into the country to teach and to help those churches.
Well, we are out of time, Brother Joey. And I just want to thank everybody who listened today, especially those who took the time to write. I want to thank you, Brother Joe, for being our guest today. I want to tell all of you that I hope that you have a safe and wonderful and joyful weekend and Lord's Day. And I want you all to always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far greater Savior than you are a sinner.